Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining today's first quarter 2025 earnings call for Lotus Pharma, ticker 1795.tw. This call will be conducted in English with a replay available after the event. Founded in 1966, Lotus is an international pharmaceutical company with a global presence in the commercialization of both novel and generic drugs, and has established operations in global markets, including the US, Europe, Japan, China, and Brazil. Company management attending the call today include Mr. Petar Vazirov, Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Beato Shin, Vice President of Strategies and Finance. The call will consist of a company presentation, followed by a Q&A session at the end. Now, I will pass on the mic to Mr. Vazirov to start us off with a company presentation.
Thank you very much, Jack. Good morning or good afternoon to everyone who has dialed in, and thank you for your continuous support and interest in Lotus. As usual, I'll first go over Lotus results and business highlights, giving an overview of our latest achievements and progress, and I'll then pass on to Bjartur to go over to financials in more details. So first, to start with, I'm very happy to announce that we have delivered a very strong start to 2025, where we achieved a set of record-breaking first quarter result, which was obviously possible due to excellent execution of our diversified growth strategy. Revenue reached $4.7 billion, which represents 30% year-on-year growth. EPS came in at 5.47 Taiwanese dollars per share, representing 38% year-on-year increase. Again, both are new quarter one record for the company. Looking at our gross margin, it was up 6.7 percentage points compared to same period of last year, reaching 61.6% during the quarter. This improvement was primarily driven by a greater contribution of high margin products, in particular our oral oncology products, which are being commercialized mainly, of course, in US, also markets outside Asia, but also in some Asian markets. Moving down, we have also maintained a healthy operating margin of 36.2%, underscoring our strong operational execution. Now let's look at the two segments of our business in Asian markets. Revenue reached 20% year-on-year growth, which was mainly contributed by Thailand and Vietnam. In Thailand, we have successfully completed the integration of Lotus and Teva businesses, strengthening our local presence and achieving synergies which were laid down initially in the business plan. So this helped Thai market for Lotus achieving growth of 500% year on year. So it's a very important to obviously not only to have a good deal, in this case the acquisition of their commercial business, but also a successful integration and execution post the deal which we have in place, obviously in Thailand. In Vietnam, we have achieved successful takeover of Alpha Choi business from Sanofi. By takeover, I mean successful handover of commercial activities. So we are currently basically doing the commercial activities for the product along with our distribution partner, Zuli. Typically, this is one of the risks in brand acquisition deals. Post-deal signing, there's always risk when you take over the commercially the product. In this case, I'm happy to report that this was done in an excellent manner, executed in an excellent manner, and obviously extremely well done by Lotus team, and also, of course, thanks for cooperation from Sanofi as well as Zurich Pharma. So overall, this deal has helped us to achieve 750% growth in Vietnam, which is our biggest market for timing in Southeast Asia. compared to same period of last year. So happy to see these results. So going to the Korea, in Korea, the highlight is we have entered in a partnership with CKD, which is a leading company in Korea, co-promotional partnership for their biosimilar darbepoetin alfa. This is a long-acting erythropoietin, which is the only biosimilar long-acting erythropoietin, darbepoetin, approved in the Korean market. And this is obviously testimony for our strong presence in nephrology. So CKD choose us as a commercial partner. And definitely this product will reinforce our position in this segment. So overall, we launched 15 SKUs in Asia during first quarter. Now switching to export markets, revenue increased 14% year-on-year. And this was mainly driven by sales of our flagship product, lenalidomide, in the US. And overall, we have launched 13 SKUs in export markets. So now I'd like to give you an update on our pipeline. So far, we are progressing very well with our strategic objective to continue building a hybrid pipeline, which is a prerequisite for sustainable and profitable growth of the company, as we discussed on several meetings already. This is we feel that this is a critical success factor in the industry, being so competitive and having a pipeline which contains not only generic products but also innovation is the backbone of our success so far, and we believe also it will translate ultimately in continuous and profitable growth going forward. Looking at the filings here to date, the most important filings, obviously, voclosporin US. This is a NC-1 filing. It's a soft gel product, which is complex manufacturing and development. And the challenge in general with NC-1 filing is that there's a single date where you have to submit the dossier. Cannot be earlier. This is linked with obviously patent expiries, and if you file it afterwards, it's kind of losing the momentum. The product becomes commercially feasible. So in this case, we succeeded, and we have happy to report successful filing. In the US, FDA has accepted our filing, as you know, and of course the launch will be determined by relevant patent expires in the US market. We have also filed ruxotinib immediate release formulation in some EU markets, and this will follow obviously by filing in Asian markets based on having specific document which will allow us. It's called CPP, based on the EU approval later this year. Going through the approvals year to date, I would like to highlight a Zirka approval in Taiwan. So this is effectively a new chemical entity, and this is the first and only class 1 ERA therapy. So indication is pulmonary hypertension. So this is increasingly important indication, because this is the medical condition with high incidence and high rate of diagnosis, and there are not many available treatments. So we are, as you know, we have in license the product rights from Eli Lilly, and we are effectively now working on the launch. So we are preparing the launch as a marketing activity and also manufacturing the product. So this will be a launch in Q3 this year. We have also launched pomalidomide in UK through our partner. So this is internally developed product for a compound of lenalidomide, and we will continue with launching pomalidomide in EU, also through a partner from Q2 onwards. So the target and the objective, and we are well positioned for that, is to launch across EU markets in the next 6 months. And we have already secured a partnership with a pan-European pharmaceutical company, which has obviously resources, commercial resources to execute this launch. We have also enzalutamide approval in Korea now. This is important because this is going to be a launch on day one. And we are, for the time being, the only company which has approval in Korea. This is an important product because we have already a very strong presence in Korea in prostate cancer segment, and this drug obviously definitely will reinforce our position. We think this will be a successful launch. Also, we receive approval for Didrogesterone in EU. This is a niche oral contraceptive, which we are planning to launch later this year. AlphaJoy, I already talked about this. It's not really a launch from scratch, but it's more takeover of the business, like I said, from Sanofi. This was, again, executed in an excellent manner. Darbepoetin, already mentioned, partnership with Korea. Pomalidomide also launched in U.K. And Nintedanib, we haven't launched the product yet because the launch is subject to patent expiry in the relevant markets. However, we are preparing the launch. This is going to be our biggest launch, as you know, based on our five-year plan from internal development. And the launch preparation is going very well. So the team is focused on making this a big success. And last but not least, on key licensing agreements, which have been finalized, signed year to date, I'm happy to report that we closed three deals for three major products. These are all innovative products. I'll start with serplulimab. This is a PD-1 monoclonal antibody developed by Henlius. This is basically a product which is indicated for small cell lung cancer. We have secured the rights for Korea, which is basically the biggest market for this indication. And we have extensively discussed with Korean authorities. And we are very happy that we have obtained orphan drug designation status, which means that the product will go through a fast-track approval. It could be less than 1 year. And also, we will get 6 to 10 years data exclusivity. So we are very excited with this deal. And Henlius already successfully launched the product and received also approval in EU. So it's going to be quite exciting to launch the product, hopefully, next year. The second product is Qelbree. This is an ADHD, attention deficit product in license from a U.S. company. The product is already approved in the U.S. and already on the market with very strong sales uptake. And the good thing about this product is that this is a non-stimulant ADHD product, unlike methylphenidate. It's indicated both for children as well as adults. And we have secured here broad territory, including South Korea, Hong Kong, Taiwan, as well as all Southeast Asian markets. And last but not least, this is obviously the deal with LENZ for aceclidine. Aceclidine is, we think, a game-changer product in treatment of presbyopia. LENZ have completed successfully phase three study, which shows very strong results and value proposition for the product. And they have filed the product in the U.S. And they're expecting approval during quarter three. So this is a really exciting product. And obviously, we have been initially motivated to discuss this product because it's ophthalmology. Mainly because of Thai market, where we have, as you know, secure leading position in this therapeutic area through Teva acquisition. But we feel that this product could be an ultimate success in South Korea, also opportunity in Southeast Asia. Unfortunately, rights for Taiwan are not available. But we might try to get the rights at a later stage for Taiwan market. Next slide. So moving basically to a pipeline summary. As of today, we have total of 65 active projects in development and also under discussions from business development with relevant third parties. So this is quite rich pipeline. And again, this is a combination of generic products, which is mainly driven by internal development, as well as branded products, innovation products, which is mainly driven by business development. So on the R&D side, we have 30 active ongoing projects with strategic focus on oncology and immunology, reflecting on our commitment in high-value, high-barrier therapies, also providing access to patients at a lower cost. From our business development, we are in discussions currently for 35 products for in-licensing opportunities. So these are obviously projects with more diversified therapeutic areas, not only oncology, but also we have CNS, primary care, lifestyle, and nephrology. So again, like I said at the beginning, so we firmly believe that creating a and continuously building, evolving a hybrid pipeline of products is a critical success factor for continuous double-digit and profitable growth of the business. And this is, of course, will remain always a focus for the company. Now, going specifically on the R&D piece, we have 30 ongoing projects. As you can see here, basically the breakdown by type of projects, we have 11 first to file opportunities. This is mainly US, obviously, US targeted products. Another 13 products under development, which are scheduled to be launched on day one. Day one means patent expiry in the relevant territories, key markets at least. And we have also added 6 505B2 programs, which are effectively branded products. So this is change of focus of the R&D. In the last 2-3 years, the R&D was mainly focused on generic development, first of all, and day one. Now we added more complexity because we have much more resources in terms of portfolio selection, and also more resources in terms of development capabilities, because as you know, we have moved also our development center to India. New thing which we have been doing since more or less mid of last year is the co-development agreements. So the objective of the co-development agreements here is obviously to partner with companies which have access to unique technology or unique IP. What I mean by unique IP is sometimes there are companies, especially API companies, which are developing particular API based on a specific process, based on a specific salt, which allows you to launch the product in the US, let's say, or in Europe, 1, 2, sometimes 3 years earlier. This is obviously a huge upside. And we have identified several products, relevant companies, and we have entered in a partnership. Same applies for technology. Obviously, we cannot do everything in-house. We don't have access to all technologies available. But of course, there are a lot of companies which are not only having the technology, but also have proven, validated, and deliver success based on this technology. So we are working on identifying products and respective partners and entering a co-developments on or contract developments agreement. So this is obviously a, a coordination work between R&D and business development, but effectively the co-development part will be executed by our development team. So this is very important because by doing this, we are diversifying our product portfolio coming from the development on development. So we are not relying only on the in-house technology, but we can scale up in terms of more complex technology and more complex IP. Overall, year to date, we have initiated 5 new projects, one in oncology and 4 in primary care. So it's quite good progress. Now moving to the business development. So we have 35 projects under discussions, 18 new chemical entities, 3 505B2, 4 biosimilars, 3 branded products. When I say branded products, these are basically we're discussing with companies which potentially have products, branded products for divestment type of Eli Lilly or Sanofi deal, and also a few deals for generic products which will mainly complement our pipeline in Southeast Asia. Like I said at the beginning, our objective here is obviously business development to deliver to the pipeline innovation. I mean, we will never engage in development of new chemical entities due to the risk. Typically what we are doing here, we are targeting products which have already achieved proven concept stage, past successful phase 2 or phase 3 study, or sometimes even approved and launched in US market. I mean, obviously, Henlius deal is an example for sertolimab. The product is already approved in EU. Like I said, Lens deal for presbyopia product is, we have a product which already passed phase 3 and already filed, accepted by US FDA. The same applies for HDHD product, which is even launched on the market. So this obviously mitigates the development regulatory risk and give us much more confidence that this will be ultimately a successful project. Okay, we can go to the next slide. I think over to you, Bjartur.
So first, let me walk you through our financial results for the first quarter of 2025. And as I mentioned, Lotus had an excellent start to the year, delivering 4.7 billion in revenue, which represented a solid 13% year-on-year growth.
I think, Gator, sorry, but I think you should speak closer to the microphone.
Okay. All right. So, our performance was strong across the board in Asia. Revenue grew 12% to 2.6 billion, driven primarily by the outstanding performance in Thailand and Vietnam. And the Southeast Asian cluster performed exceptionally well, growing threefold compared to last year. And this growth was fueled by the consolidation of Teva Thailand business, as well as the acquisition of our subsidiaries Vietnam and Cambodian operations. For export markets, revenue grew approximately 14%, reaching $2.1 billion, led by robust growth in US, where the revenue rose by approximately 30% this quarter. So our gross margin improved significantly, averaging 62% in Q1, which was approximately 7% So this is within percentage points higher than the same period last year. This improvement was primarily driven by a higher contribution from higher margin export products, such as lenalidomide, as well as the addition of Alpha Cherry in Asia, which delivered an outstanding 87% gross margin. Our integrated Lotus and Teva operation in Thailand, which also delivered a strong gross margin of 62% on average. Now, moving to operating expenses, our SG&A costs increased about 13% year on year. The main driver was the addition of sales and marketing expenses in Thailand and Vietnam, which accounted for almost 60% of the increase. And the remaining 40% came from higher payroll and benefits. R&D expenses rose by about 44%, which is also mainly due to the increase in payroll costs. Despite these increases, our overall operating expenses ratio remained stable at 25% of the revenue, which is consistent with Q1 of last year and slightly lower than the full year 2024 average of 26%. Our operating margin improved to 36% this quarter, up 4 percentage points from 2024 average. Overall, over the past 3 years, our operating margin has steadily risen from 28% in 2022 to 32% in 2024. This reflects our ability to consistently expand gross margins, as well as keeping the operating cost growth at a moderate pace. Now, turning to the non-operating income and expenses, the net financing costs were 117.5 million, down approximately 9% year on year, thanks mainly to the higher interest income from our cash deposits. We recorded also another gain of 130.5 million in Q1. Primarily due to the favorable exchange rate movements. However, as many of the investors would anticipate, we also believe that the trend of favorable US dollars versus Taiwanese dollars trend is reversing Q2 as the recent appreciation of Taiwanese dollars against USD in May could lead to a sizable effect. Forex loss. And that said, this loss would likely be a one-time event, assuming the US dollar stabilizes at the current level. Should the US dollar strengthen, however, later in the year, the company may recover part or the losses in Q2. It's worth noting that while the devaluation of the US dollars impacts the top line revenue, its effect on growth and the operating profit is much smaller. And this is because the majority of Lotus's costs and investment are also denominated in foreign currencies, predominantly US dollars, which offsets some of the forex impact. Over the past 12 months, our Taiwanese dollars, US dollars gap stood at about $60 million, roughly about 10% of the group's revenue. And this is mainly related to we have to change US dollars to Taiwanese dollars for larger payments, such as dividends, taxes, and longer payments. While the company reports in Taiwanese dollars, our operations remain largely foreign currency based. So finally, on the bottom line, we delivered a net earnings of 5.47 per share in Q1, which is a remarkable 38% increase year over year. And this quarter ranks as the third most profitable in our company's history. Looking forward, we remain laser focused on maintaining this momentum and delivering strong results throughout the rest of the year, despite the challenging macroeconomic environment. Now, coming to the next slide, we can go through our Q1 revenue breakdown and highlight the key changes year over year between 2024 and 2025. Starting with Asia, revenues in the region grew 12% year over year. Southeast Asia was a major driver, with the revenue climbing by 327 million, thanks to the integration of Avatar in Vietnam and the Teva business in Thailand into our existing operations. And in Thailand, revenue this quarter grew more than four times year over year, reaching approximately 230 million. And Vietnam also showed very strong, strong growth, with revenue coming in about 160 million Taiwanese dollars. In total, Southeast Asia contributed 425 million this quarter, and up from less than 100 million a year ago. Our Thailand domestic business was up 4% to 660 million. Meanwhile, Korea saw a decline of 5%, mainly due to timing difference of revenue. Export revenue increased 14% year over year, largely driven by a strong lenalidomide sales to the US. And the US sales rose by around 450 million, which helped to offset the decline about 195 million in exports to the rest of the world. Again, that was mainly timing related. And next slide, yeah. And this quarter, about 55% of our total revenue came from Asia, with remaining 45% from global exports. And the US remaining our largest single market and contributing roughly 40% of total revenue. Within Asia, Korea's share of revenue declined from 38% of last year to about 32% of the global revenue this year. And the rest of Asia increased from 3 to 10, and Taiwan held steady, contributing around 14% of our total revenue. Break down by product type, branded products just made up about 25% of our total revenue, and generics in Asia accounted for about 30%, and exports of generic products outside of Asia contributes about 45% of this quarter's total revenue. Okay. And then finally, let's take a look at the cash and capital structure. The company generated approximately 2.86 billion in operating cash inflow this quarter, which was about 1 billion higher than the same period last year. After paying interest and taxes, net cash from operations came to 2.7 billion. Out of the cash inflow, we invested approximately 1.85 billion this quarter, mostly to fund the Alphatray acquisition from Sanofi. And the remaining cash was mainly used to repay the revolving credit facilities, which remain available, of course, if needed. So as a result, we ended the quarter with a stronger cash position of 5.6 billion on hand, roughly the same as the start of the period. Compared to 1 year ago, our cash reserve has nearly doubled. At the quarter end, our interest-bearing debt stood at around $12 billion. Our gross debt to equity ratio dropped to 57%, down from 66% a year ago. Taking out of the cash on hand, the net debt to equity improved to 37% from the 48% last year. Lastly, the EBITDA over the past 12 months increased significantly from approximately 6 billion. To approximately 8.3 billion, which is, as I mentioned, 38% down. And this is about our net debt to EBITDA ratio down to Lastly, I want to turn your attention to some recent developments in the US market and a number of new uncertainties that have risen and caused concerns. So, mainly, we're talking about the US tariffs, as well as the so called most favored nation drug tax and methadone drug tax. Firstly, I think let's talk about the tariffs. And while we're fortunate to have an exemption currently in place for global imports exports to the US, there is a growing concern that Trump's administration may impose tariffs on these imports in the future. Now, given these uncertainties, we're adopting a wait and see approach, and not committing to any long-term vaccination starting to get that, because there is a large uncertainty whether the tariff will be levied, and if so, how the tariff will be levied. And the market consensus right now seems to think that the tariff is one of the main targets used to bring big pharma to the table and negotiate to bring more pharmaceutical manufacturing back to the US. However, should the tariff go into effect, we do not expect a near term production impact to our business. Our US pharma origin is very well positioned with sufficient nanoidomide inventory, which is shipped to them in April. They have enough inventory on hand to support the demand throughout 2026. So, in other words, we have both us sufficient time and headroom to address properly should the current the concept right. Make up for 90% of the total U.S. market stands, while already accounting for around 10% of the volume. And so we are the generics and the biosimilar, which are our products, are already under quite intensive market competition, and therefore should see minimal impact. And therefore, this led to our conclusion that you know, we believe that MFA and second order will have a limited impact on our products, you know, in a matter of different analysis. And of course, we will continue to monitor the situation closely, and we will wait to see how the current administration implements the referencing in the coming weeks, and how the court and the Congress will respond to this executive order. And so I think this is something that we will continue to monitor and explore the remedies appropriately to the risk when it is material. Okay. So moving on to the last slide, which sums up our formula for a sustainable long-term growth. So Lotus is answer to a sustainable long-term growth can be summarized in four strategies. So number one, develop products in-house and the result must R&D pipeline focused on personal files, proprietary tools, and day one launches of generic products. And we see from our current forecast, we're looking at the products individually over the next 5 years. This pipeline from our internal development can bring a potential revenue upside of cumulatively $800 million from this pipeline. And secondly, to complement our retail development, we will focus to bring in potential innovative products from US or Europe or elsewhere to Asia. And those innovative products have a great market potential in our Asian markets. And we currently are forecasting a cumulative of over $300 million of revenue potential over the next 5 years. And then, you know, on top of that, we'll be continue our strategy to acquire virtual brands for Asian markets. And from the deals that we are currently working on, and we're seeing over $400 million of cumulative revenue potential for the company over the course of the next 5 years. On top of that, obviously, you know, as we have been doing so far, we are also focused on to acquire companies with good platforms and pipeline to create synergy in our business with our business. And this obviously we don't have a concrete number yet, depending on which deal eventually will close. So to sum everything up, we're looking at a additional revenue potential from all the strategies that we're working on relentlessly, also generating over 1.5 billion of revenue cumulatively over the next 5 years. And this will give us a strong pipeline as well as the ability to address any uncertainty in the current business. So with that, I will end the presentation and we can move to the Q&A section.
Thank you, Beato. And thank you, both Beato and Pithar, for the presentation. We will now start off with the Q&A session. So if you have a question, you may enter it on the web page on the text box below, and I will read the questions out for management response. And while questions are coming in from the investors, perhaps I can start off with a couple questions of my own, and we'll go over to the investor questions after. So I think I understand that we touched on this a little bit earlier, but just want to drill it down a bit more on the tariff situation. Just curious, in terms of our current operation and anything you mentioned, in the long term, then potentially might need to consider moving some manufacturing to the U.S. Would you be able to kind of frame it for us in terms of, I think, one, how with our current infrastructure, how much of the tariff might we be able to pass on to, whether downstream or upstream, to our vendors? So how much of that might we need to absorb if there is a tariff that does come down? And I think, two, in terms of the manufacturing change, have we done kind of exploratory analysis in terms of how much might that impact us in terms of margins, whether we might have to move some of the manufacturing into the U.S. as or elsewhere in the world, versus kind of our current setup. So let me start out with this question.
Yeah, I'll take this question. I think basically what Alberto explained is that we don't see an imminent impact on us, even if they impose tariffs tomorrow, because effectively we have inventory for our flagship product, Lodomatic, until 2026, including, right? So for 25, 26, the inventory is already imported in the U.S., so this cannot be obviously subject to tariff. And buprenorphine naloxone, which is the other product that we have on the market already in the U.S., is being manufactured locally, so it will for sure not be impacted by the tariffs. Of course, for the pipeline, I mean, if there are tariffs in place, there will be an impact. But like we said, I mean, we can mitigate this. First of all, I think with our pipeline, which is mainly in oral oncology for the U.S., the cost of goods is typically quite low, because these are products with high market price. And there's room to absorb the tariff. This is one. Second is, I mean, we have a strategic partnership with Alvogen for many years already, and they have excellent manufacturing setup in the U.S. It's true that they don't have oral oncology capability now, but this can be actually put in place within 2-3 years, and it doesn't require significant investment, not more than $20 million, which will be paid off very quickly, right, based on the scale of the launch in the U.S. In addition to that, we can also find a CMO. I mean, there are many choices in the U.S., and in terms of resources, we have a dedicated team anyway already, which is working with CMOs, because we are using, as a matter of fact, for a number of products already CMOs. So we have a resource to support eventually movement of manufacturing to U.S., so that I don't see an issue with that. Yeah.
Okay, just to supplement your question, regarding the cost increase, if we eventually choose a different manufacturing site. So we actually have done that already for the during the first quarter of last year, we actually implemented a backup manufacturing site for lenalidomide in Germany. And so the products that we are selling now are actually German manufactured. And so we can probably witness from the gross margin today with the cost increase from a German manufactured products. Is very marginal, and we will not even notice the difference at all. So we believe that for the same product, we have the experience and know-how to make a tech transfer if necessary, and this can be done in a relatively short period of time. And the increase on the cost is probably limited. I mean, we don't believe US is going to be much, much more expensive than Germany, in terms of manufacturing costs.
Understood. Thank you. And also, let me read off just a question that came in from online. So now I'm glad to see the first quarter growth results. And just curious in terms of, especially for the Asia growth numbers, and just curious in terms of how much of the growth for the Asia revenue are inorganic versus organic. So, you know, what kind of growth rate could we expect for 2025 and also organic growth for the 2026 going forward for Asia? Thank you, Beto. And also, I think another question we have here is asking in terms of, you know, I think Beto presented a lot of pipeline progress that we have made and expect to make in the U.S. this year. I mean, are we seeing or are we observing any sort of impact from the recent FDA change announced FDA changes, both in leadership and also kind of the headcount announcements?
I'll take this question. I mean, so far we haven't seen any adverse impact, but of course this is a general concern for the industry. The good thing I think is that obviously we are focused on products which will reduce the healthcare costs, right? Generics in the U.S. And what we have been reading in between the lines is that FDA will obviously prioritize reviews of such products and even shorter sometimes the approval review process.
I see. Understand. And I guess this is kind of for me in terms of follow-up. So I do recall that I think for last year in the fourth quarter, there was I think asset saying that for LP797 that, you know, potentially have pilot readout in third quarter this year. And I'm just curious in terms of, you know, like the study, if you could share more in terms of the study design, what kind of data package that we were planning to file with. And, you know, with potentially the increasing regulatory requirements from the US FDA, you know, whether it's, you know, what kind of endpoint that might they may allow or the comparison in order for approval. I mean, do we see anything to worry about there, or do we see risk that, you know, with the study design might need to be modified or things like that?
Yeah, I mean, we have, as a matter of fact, actually pilot study results already, and they are positive. We are passing, and this gives us the confidence. Basically, we are now proceeding with the, because you have to do one study for markets outside U.S. We call it European study, but you can use this for Asia as well. It's acceptable. And one study specifically for U.S., which will start after the outcome of the European study. Although we have our pilot study results positive, of course, there's always risk for a study to fail. This product also, in terms of pharmacokinetic, is highly variable, which always increases the risk. But I mean, our team is quite confident that this will be a success. Both the European development as well as the US development. So objective is to file the product in January in the US, right? Like we said last time, we have a very strong interest from three large companies. This is in the US 505B2 product. Outside US is not considered as a 505B2. And I mean, we hope that everything will go well. So this is the update that I can give so far.
Understood. Thank you for that. And another question, I think here, if you could you elaborate more on the deal with Lens Therapeutics that was announced earlier this month. The deal size seems fairly sizable at 125 million USD compared to our, kind of the previous deals that we've made. How do we assess in terms of the market potential of the drug and any more details from the deal that could share?
Yeah, I mean the deal. I mean you cannot benchmark really with the previous deal because it's a different. It's a different model here. In this particular deal, we have we're in licensing product with manufacturing rights also. So the product is obviously they have already existing supply chain. They're using a few CMOs, which we can use. But if we want, we can also choose our CMO and own choice and transfer the product. So the product has a significant potential. It's really, we think, game changer therapy for presbyopia patients. And obviously this is reflected in our business case, which justified the deal for the board. And basically you have just as a structure fixed licensing fee. In addition to that, royalties, which are payable based on if there's a reach milestone as a achieved sales. And this is obviously how you end up to this number, right? So this is not a upfront payment, just to be clear.
Understood.
So if the product goes into the full potential, this is going to be obviously the licensing fee. Yeah, achieving all the commercial milestones. I mean, we hope so, right? It will be still amazing deal, and we really, we are very excited with this product.
Understood. And I think just do one more question before we close the call. I mean, you mentioned earlier in terms of, you know, the launch for the Nintendo is a fairly key item in our operation this year. Could you kind of just update us a bit more in terms of where we are and kind of the progress and timeline expected for this year for its launch?
Yeah, we have we have done a successfully validation of the product, which is obviously prerequisite for the launch. This is most important. It's a complex product from manufacturing, being a soft gel oncology, but based on what we have seen during the validation, we have a very robust manufacturing process, robust product. And we have already scaled up successfully also the product, the batch size, which will provide more efficiency and also reduce the cost of goods. And I mean, now we are obviously working with our partners to file necessary additional documentation variations. And we are effectively, I think, ready to go. And so far, everything goes as per the plan.
Understood. As we are closing up to the end of the call, I'll pass the mic to Petar and Beato for any closing remarks for the company.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for your time again. And like I said at the beginning, we are really happy with the strong year in terms of sales and earnings. But I think more importantly, I think we are progressing extremely well on paving the way for future growth with all the activities on the pipeline, commercial execution, and also launches and findings and approvals. So we are quite excited and looking forward for having a very successful 2025 and beyond. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Petar. Thank you, Beato. And thanks, everyone, for joining. And this will conclude the call for today. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.